From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. There's adventuring, and then there's the Bear Grylls kind of adventuring.
This could be lethal quicksand, which has been known to swallow vehicles and people whole. I'm going to show you how to get out of it alive.
Well, hopefully that's advice you'll never need. Same with surviving an avalanche or if you're stranded at sea in a life raft. But for Grylls, this is his life's work. He's ex-British Special Forces, one of the youngest climbers ever to summit Mount Everest, host of hit TV shows teaching survival skills to everyone from Julia Roberts to Shaquille O'Neal to President Barack Obama. This hour on Point, how to stay alive with Bear Grylls. And you can join us. Would you know what to do if you were lost in the jungle or deserted in the desert? What would you think are the most important survival skills everyone should have? What's your question for Bear Grylls? And oh, by the way, why do we love to sit on our couches and watch survival shows when really we ought to be getting off the couch and getting outside more? You can join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Well, Bear Grylls joins us today from London. He's the host of many survival shows such as Man vs. Wild and Running Wild with Bear Grylls. His new book is titled How to Stay Alive, The Ultimate Survival Guide for Any Situation. And we have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Bear Grylls, welcome to On Point.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well. I am safe and ensconced in my studio, so hopefully we won't be needing any advice during the course of this hour.
Well, the thing is, you never know. That's the thing. And, you know, I've learned this from traveling all over the world and meeting some people who've been through so many epic adventures and disaster and survival stories, is that what they always say to me is that I never thought this would happen to me.
Yeah.
So we never get complacent. We're always ready, always prepared.
Well, I'm actually glad that you said that, right? Because then it takes the sort of remoteness of the kinds of experiences that we've seen you have on TV and make it real, right? Because you're right. We never know when there will be an earthquake or some other disaster that might strike wherever you are. But tell me, though, how did you get into... What was the driving force behind getting you into a life that embraced those kinds of situations?
Oh, I think, you know, growing up, it was always the only thing I could do well as a kid. You know, my dad at a young age taught me to climb, and we were always outdoors and making stuff and climbing a lot. And he'd been a former Marine beforehand. And I was a scout as well. And I just grew up loving that stuff. I was never particularly good at sports or school, but I was always a kid that could climb up the side of the buildings or up the high trees. And, you know, so much of my identity, I think, growing up was wrapped around that.
Yeah.
And then after school, I joined the military and then got a chance to really start training these skills properly and developing them.
Well, so was it there then that you sort of, it's more than just going outside and climbing trees. It's going into situations where your very survival is at stake. And you got the training on how to survive that when you were SAS, right? With the British military?
Yeah, with which is part of the British Special Forces.
Yeah.
And, you know, but a lot of it is having the will. You know, if that's what your passion is, you kind of, the rest is a process, you know. And I really dreamt of trying to join that part of the military, you know, worked super hard to get there. And, you know, once I was there, then it was just a process of learning all of these skills and really developing them. My job there became a lot of the combat survival, so learning how to survive, but in a covert capacity, so you're hidden. Really then started to develop a lot of the climbing skills and the skydiving and all of these things, everything from demolitions, the unarmed combat, the evasive driving, all of the stuff that really, you know, it forms so much of the backbone of this book, How to Stay Alive. You know, all the little kind of tips and tricks about if things start to go wrong, what you can do and to, you know, stay calm in those moments and just do a few simple things that's going to get you out of that scrape.
Well, I was wondering, before you joined the military, when you were, you know, having those adventures with your father, for example, did you ever encounter a moment where the unexpected did happen and did you learn from him sort of what to do in those situations? Did that ever happen?
Yeah, I mean, I learned a lot of things about what not to do growing up. I mean, that was the thing. I was always getting into scrapes. You know, I remember trying to cross this harbour at low tide near, you know, where I lived on this little island off the south coast of the UK. And, you know, everyone always said, oh, I'll never go near the mud. You know, at low tide, it's super dangerous. You get sucked into this stuff. And, you know, as a kid with a friend of mine, I thought, come on, let's try and get across this. You know, got halfway, started to sink. Thought, oh, no, I'm such an idiot. You know, and then got totally stuck and then started to see people calling the Coast Guard and the lifeboats and thought, oh, I'm going to get in so much trouble if I don't figure out a way of getting out of this. And then I worked out if I could just get my leg out of this and pull my leg out and get my arm out of the mud and I could start to wriggle and, hold on, this is working. If I'm stopped panicking and actually start to swim like a seal on the top of this mud, you know. So I kind of figured this stuff out by mistakes. I eventually made it out and then scarpered. I did get caught. My mum went mad. She made me do chores for the head of the lifeboats for the rest of the summer. But, you know, so much of survival is about, you know, what's that phrase? Necessity is the mother of all invention. You know, if you've got to find a way, you're eventually going to figure out how to make a raft or start a fire or build a shelter or whatever it is. So mistakes and failures have been a huge part of the learning process for me. Having said that, I did, you know, I also did learn a lot through the scouts and through my dad, and we were always making stuff and, you know, doing that climbing together. So I'm all, I look back now, my father's no longer around, but I look back with huge love and gratitude for those simple times together, you know.
You know how you just said necessity is the mother of invention. I just want to play a clip from a real life situation that someone else just survived. In August, 19-year-old Aldi Novelle Adelang was rescued after surviving for 49 days adrift at sea after a storm tore his tiny fishing vessel off its moorings. He's 19 years old, 49 days at sea. Here he is speaking with CNN.
For 1 week, there was communication with friends on another raft. After that, there was no communication. I met a lot of ships. After 1 month, I saw a ship and asked for help. I shouted in Indonesian. They all just passed. Then I remember my friend said, if there's a big ship by, say help. And finally, the ship helped me.
That's 19-year-old Aldi Novelle Adelang. He was at sea for 49 days, survived there by catching fish, burning portions of his raft for cooking fire, and getting drinking water by squeezing out his clothes. So, I mean, talk about necessity being the mother of invention there.
Well, he's smart. You know, that is, it's one of the most brutal and unforgiving places to have to survive at sea in a life raft. But also it's a place of so many of the epic stories of survival. You know, I think back to another one that I remember hearing of this family that had their yacht hit a container floating in the water. They sank. It sank. They end up in the life raft for, you know, for a mega long period like this. And they ran out of water. And the mother was a nurse. And she knew that to rehydrate them, because what happened, a lot of they've been catching these turtles and they had turtle blood and water and rainwater in the bottom of the raft, but it all gone fetid and, you know, stagnant, and they knew if they drank it was going to make them sick, but they needed fluids. The mother was a nurse and she knew if she could give them an enema, give them water through their backside, they wouldn't get sick, but it would hydrate them. And the kids refused. They said, we're not having that. And it wasn't until they passed out with dehydration that the mother could get this tube in, could rehydrate them through the enema, you know, and save their life for another few days and eventually rescued. So, you know, again, that is about resourcefulness and inventiveness and a few basic skills about thinking, how do you get fluids into your body without drinking this stuff?
Yeah.
But life raft is tough, and it is all about, you know, getting out of that sun and trying to conserve water when it does rain.
Didn't you basically take something like a raft across the Atlantic once with your friends when you were a younger man?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, we did it. We took a rigid inflatable boat, you know, one of those. But, it, you know, it's a powered boat. It's much better than a life raft.
Okay. But,
and also we were in the Arctic, so it was minus 30 rather than, you know, stuck in a life raft bobbing around in the South Pacific in crazy heat. But we had some frightening times. We hit some massive force 9 gales in this boat. It was an open rib. You know, we just got smashed by waves and icebergs and caught in the storm for days.
Yeah.
But, You know, that was an expedition. It was 3,500 miles across the roof of the world up there. And I think we were very lucky to get out of that one. It was a humbling experience for sure. And the sea can reduce you, you know, fast. But, you know, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And, you know, actually I'm sitting with I've got a couple of friends of mine who have come into the studio here, and Ben and Simon, and they've been through an incredible experience themselves with their family and, you know, survived some proper battles. And I think survival crosses so many different things. It's not just about the physical survival, it's about life survival, and whether it's illness or losing people. And what I recognise as a survivor is the traits that go through people. And it's not always about the skills. Skills you can learn, but what's harder to develop is that survivor spirit of determination.
Yeah.
Just like young Ben I'm with here now, and his dad Simon now. That positivity and that courage and that tenacity to never give up.
So
and that really is the heart of it all.
It's the survivor's mindset you're talking about.
It's everything, you know. Yeah. It really is. It's the other stuff you learn and you figure it out if you've got to figure it out. But the heart of great survival is that fire inside, and we all have it. You know, I just think it gets covered up sometimes by life, and sometimes we doubt ourselves, and that's normal. But it is. It's a God-given thing. It's in us all, and sometimes when we're taking the edge, we find it.
Yeah. And you said your friend Ben and his dad are there, right there in the studio with you. You're in London,
right,
so I
right
can't
with
see.
Me. No, they're wonderful. They've you want to tell a little bit of your story, Simon? Come
no.
on, this will blow your mind.
I don't want to cut him off because we've just got to take a break here in 30 seconds. So maybe we'll do that when we come back. We're speaking with Bear Grylls. He's adventurer, writer, television host of Running Wild with Bear Grylls, and author of the new book, How to Stay Alive: The Ultimate Survival Guide for Any Situation. We'll talk about some of those situations and those pieces of advice when we come back. What is your question for Bear Grylls? What is that survivor's mindset? I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Bear Grylls. He's an adventurer, writer, and television host of shows such as Man vs. Wild, which aired from 2006 to 2011, and now host of Running Wild with Bear Grylls. He's author of the new book, How to Stay Alive, The Ultimate Survival Guide for Any Situation. Before the break, Bear, people tell me I talk too fast, so maybe I should slow down here. You were telling us you've got a couple friends there in the studio. That was a little unexpected to me because we didn't know you'd have anyone else with you on your end in London. But you know what? You've inspired me about this talk about the survivor's mindset and getting outside your comfort zone. So we're going to get outside of our little radio comfort zone here for a minute.
Yeah, good for you.
Can you reintroduce us to who your friends are? And you said they have an incredible survival story.
Well, what I was saying is that survival is so much about the spirit, you know, and the rest of it is the arena that we end up playing in, whether you're stuck in a life raft or whether you're in a plane crash or whether you're dealing with bereavement or illness or whatever it is. It's all about having that survivor spirit. And, you know, it's great. I love being here. I love talking about this. And I'm excited to get questions from your listeners. But I always try and kind of bring in inspirational people as well. And Ben and Simon are a couple that I've met. They reached out to me. You'll hear their story in a minute. But I really wanted to meet them.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, come and join me for this interview because this is a fun one. And we'll take some questions and all of that. But what they know about is togetherness and holding on.
Uh-huh.
So, and Ben is aged, how old are
11.
You,
Ben?
Hello,
11.
Ben.
And Simon is his dad. So, Ben, go on, tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, hang on for just a second, Ben. I'm sorry, but first of all, since I don't know who you are, and our listeners don't know. Can you just introduce yourself a little more fully? What's your full name, and where are you from?
I'm Benjamin Thomas Taylor. I'm from Cheshire in England. I'm 11.
Okay, and your dad is Simon, sitting next to you there in London.
Yeah.
That's correct, yes.
Hello, Simon. What's your full name? Also from Cheshire, I presume.
Hi, yes, Simon Taylor, also from Cheshire.
Okay,
yes.
Well, it's great to have you as a surprise guest on the show. So Ben, tell us a little bit about what Bear's talking about. What's your survival story?
My dad will tell you.
Okay.
He's a bit nervous.
Oh, that's quite all right. It's all unexpected.
Ben has quite bad asthma. He can be hospitalised for about 4 days at a time, being unable to breathe. So he's on regular medication for that. But he wants to get better and fight it. So he's tried boxing, but most recently, Bear's program and this new book especially has inspired him to get out and about. So he loves going climbing in the mountains, and he's always pushing himself. Every time we go, he uses an inhaler a lot, but mm-hmm. he's really cutting back on using the inhaler now. So he's really pushing himself, getting higher up the mountains, literally, and you know, using the inhaler less. He's really pushing himself, pushing his spirit.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great. And Ben, let me just turn back to you really quickly. So, what is it about Bear and what he's done and his book that inspires you to push yourself? Why do you want to do that?
It's very inspirational because all the things in there, like getting out of all the stuff and everything and all the fights and everything, it's just inspirational.
Okay, well, so let's see how far that inspiration goes, because I want to play a clip here from 2007. This is from an episode of Bear Grylls' Man vs. Wild, and he was dropped into the rugged terrain of Western Australia, and he ran out of water. And here's what happened next.
The only thing I can do is to drink my own pee, and this is something I've never done before, and I'm expecting it to be pretty horrible, but I need to keep those fluids going in.
It may seem disgusting, but your own urine is safe to drink.
That's Bear Grylls rehydrating in Western Australia in 2007. Ben, I'm going to let you...
How can I forget that one? Wow.
I'm going to let you off the hook here, Ben.
That's not the first time either, I'll tell you that, Ben. You're lucky. What are you drinking there? You're lucky I've given you a normal cup of tea. Yeah.
A cup of tea? Good. How very civilized.
That ain't apple juice, Ben. That ain't apple juice.
Ben, would you go so far as to drink your own urine if you had to, stuck on top of a mountain?
Depends. Probably, yeah.
Depends.
Probably, yeah.
Well, Ben and Simon, thank you for being our surprise guest this hour. Bear Grylls, let me turn back to you. Was it disgusting? It sounds like it was.
Oh, look, a lot of things in survival are disgusting, you know, but I've learned you've got to leave your prejudices behind. You've got to do whatever it takes. And survival food is never going to taste nice or look nice. And survival, you know, fluids certainly don't taste nice, but it's about doing whatever it takes, you know. And I'm definitely not one of these people who drinks pee for fun. Listen, there are a few weirdos out there. And actually, I've met a few of them over the years, and I kind of make a swift exit if I get cornered by somebody who tells me they do it for fun at home.
But, you know, but, I'm looking in your book, though, How to Stay Alive. And on page 28 here, you actually have this really great diagram of below ground solar stills. That if you're in the desert, i.e. someplace like Western Australia, you dig a hole in the ground, but what, a foot or so deep? And if you have a piece of plastic, you put plastic over that hole and some rocks around it and a stone in the middle so that whatever water contents in the soil around the hole will actually condense underneath the plastic and drip into a cup. And you say here, if you urinate in the hole before setting up the still, moisture in your urine will condense into clean drinking water. Why didn't you do
that? You could. The thing is, if you're really dehydrated, drinking your pee when it's brown pee is not going to help you. You're just into pure waste product. So if you can make a solar still like this, you have the resources to do that. Peeing into the bit around it, it's going to evaporate, like you say, condense, and then you're going to get fluids out of that. But if you're well hydrated when you find yourself stranded in a survival situation, for example, your car breaks down or whatever it is, you know, and you're well hydrated, you don't want to be peeing out those fluids, because actually if your pee is clear, that can actually help hydrate you. So you want to be drinking that. You want to be using it in other ways, maybe peeing onto your clothes and wrapping around your head to cool your head. These are all things I've had to do a bunch of times. I mean, it always makes me laugh looking back on it, because it's always the crew that go, "Bear, you stink." For the next 2 days, we're moving. I've got my T-shirt wrapped around my neck in a headscarf of pee, and you know. But so, it's about whatever it takes, yeah, isn't it?
Since you mentioned your crew, I've always wondered. I mean, how your crew is there with you, with their equipment, having to go through the same terrain as you are. I mean, how much do you ask of them in terms of having a survival mindset or doing the things that you're even doing?
I'll tell you what, they're incredible. They really are. They've been with me from day one. It's a small team. You know, we're a real kind of band of brothers and full of respect and admiration, and everything you kind of think and hope about them is true. You know, they always say, "Hey, Bear, you have the easy job. We got to do everything you do, but backwards, carrying a camera." Yeah. You know, and it's a bit, you know, so be under no illusion. They are incredible and they work the hardest. And the real unsung heroes in the whole story.
All right. Well, we're speaking with Bear Grylls. He is host of Running Wild with Bear Grylls. And, of course, Man vs. Wild. He's got a new book out called How to Stay Alive, The Ultimate Survival Guide for Any Situation. Let's go to Art, who's calling from Pocosin, Virginia. You're on the air, Art.
Hey, Bear.
Hey,
Art. Wanted to ask you, you know, I agree with your logic on instinct is incredible. And the survival of human, but above the Arctic Circle on my trips there, I can't get over the tundra. Would you ever do a show using old style gear and wool and leather, just kind of a retro style suit without the modern conveniences? Thanks.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I mean, the Arctic, listen, one of the most unforgiving environments. You know, I've done both the Arctic many times and also Antarctica. The difference between the Arctic is that wet, you know, and that is a really unforgiving part of that. Once you start getting gear wet and sleeping bags or socks or gloves or whatever, you know, then you start putting the Arctic wind chill into it. It's a really harsh, unforgiving environment. Modern gear transforms a lot of that, for sure. But doing it retro old style, I mean, what I've learned is that, wow, they were really tough in those days. But what you've got to also remember, for them, that gear was the ultra most modern, incredible stuff available. And it's quite interesting to look at some of the old equipment as well. Things like wool actually generates heat when it's wet. So that's interesting. It's kind of, if you're a sheep, you know, you get wet, it actually generates heat. It generates heat, you know, and a lot of modern fabrics don't do that sort of thing. So even though they're not going to be as good as Gore-Tex and all of this, the some of the old stuff is amazing.
Well, and also, if I can just jump in, Bear, I mean, do you think that we've lost some basic skills in modern life that used to be something that most people did learn, or many people did learn, you know, how to read the terrain, orienteering, knowing what time it is just by looking at the sky, basic knots, you know, starting a fire, all this stuff that wasn't sort of the rarefied world of survivalists, but rather just common knowledge. It seems that we've lost a lot of that.
I think as civilization, we've totally lost a lot of that. And I meet so many men come up to me actually and say, "Do you know, I'm a man's man, but I feel I should know how to tie knots. I should know how to start a fire. I should know how to deal with my car in a breakdown." And I think these sort of skills just aren't taught so much. And, you know, why I love things like, you know, the Scouts is that it encourages, you know, boys and girls with simple adventure outdoor skills that, you know, God forbid, one day could save their lives. And it's why, you know, it's what I'm trying to do with How to Stay Alive, this book I've done, is that, you know, it's not the sort of book you're going to sit down and read cover to cover, because it's got everything from how to survive hurricanes and tsunamis to bear attacks and shark attacks. But I kind of keep it in my bathroom, you know, when I'm there and I just want to read a quick 30 seconds, I've got it. And these little snippets drop in, they drip feed into your brain. And
yeah,
again, I've met many people who've remembered something from the show or remembered something from a book I've done, and you know, and it's helped them at a big time. I met a kid the other day who'd snowboarder. He got lost. He ended up crossing this frozen lake, went through it, and remembered what he should do, and it saved his life. So, God forbid it happens, but yeah. You're right, as a society, we've lost a lot of these skills, and we should reconnect as much as we can. We don't have to become total nuts about it, but just a little bit of information is very empowering for boys and girls and men and women to know that if they had to, they've got it.
Well, you talk about sort of the drip effect of reading these little hints. There's one that I was reading a couple of days ago where if you don't have a watch for some reason and you're out in the wild, you can roughly estimate the time by sticking your palm in front of your face on aligned with the horizon and count sort of the four fingers of your hand and see how many sets of fingers you have, and each finger is 15 minutes between the horizon and the sun, and you can figure out roughly, what is it, how much time until sunset?
Yeah, so, you know, how many times we see the sun dipping and, you know, people judge how long it is till it's dark. They think, oh, I'll put up my tent where, you know, I've still got masses of time. But actually, it's just a really simple trick. You hold your hand out, you put your top finger, you know, on where the sun is, and the number of fingers down to the horizon is 15 minutes of fingers. And you go, yeah, three fingers, 45 minutes, it's gonna get dark, you know. And simple things like that, you know. I get such a kick out of teaching, you know, people. We run these survival academies again all over the world, and it's just simple stuff, mm-hmm. but that kind of... You never know when you might need it. Yeah. And it's good to have a few little tips and tricks up your sleeve.
Let's go to Jason, who's calling from Santa Fe, New Mexico. You're on the air, Jason.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. The show is really wonderful. It's lots of great information, obviously, and it's pretty entertaining watching Bear torture himself. But I basically have made it mandatory viewing for my two kids just for what Bear touched on earlier in the show, and that's the adaptability and resilience and grit component of it. I think that adds a lot to our everyday lives, just, you know, making yourself stretch as a person. And so that's what I think the real power of the underlying messages of what Bear is offering us. Yeah. And I just, you know, I really like it. I've done some survival stuff before. I've done a fair number of harebrained things out in the wilderness, and I've traveled a lot, and mindset is really kind of it, in my opinion. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Jason, thank you for your call. Let's go to Steve, who's calling from Detroit, Michigan, also wants to talk about the importance of mindset. Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I really love your show, Bear. And the closest I've had to a real... my harrowing survival experience actually was training when I was in the Navy. I was Special Forces, Combat Search and Rescue. Mm-hmm. And so we got in some fairly extremist situations. And the first week of the training was living off the land. And there were 40 of us. And we were able to use only the things in our survival vests, which is one of the things we wore when we flew on missions. And so we learned how to make fishing, fishing gear out of what we had in there. At any rate, we were able to snare two rabbits, and we split them up 40 ways, and I got to eat a rabbit lung, which we boiled in a coffee can with some greens. I lost 14 pounds in 2 weeks.
In 2 weeks,
but
wow.
Part of the training, and this is what I wanted to get to, was part of the training was an isolation exercise, where the first week in the woods, but it was pretty much 40 men, groups of 10. And then for 48 hours, we had to build an isolation shelter. And we're in the mountains of Maine up near Canada, very rugged. And for 48 hours, we didn't see anyone. We didn't hear anyone. And that was the most difficult part of the training mm-hmm. for me, even including the waterboarding and all the stuff we did in the week we were in the simulated POW camp. My question to you is, first, have you ever been in a situation where you were fighting for your life, or you were doing even a show where it was just you? And I know that's hard with your camera crew. The reason I say that is almost 40 years later, the thing that I recognized as the most difficult was keeping myself alive mentally.
Steve, I'm going to just jump in here. I'm sorry about that, but we've got less than 60 seconds before the break. But Steve, thank you for your call. Bear, do you want to at least start an answer?
I know you got to go for a break. But yeah, I totally hear you. And also to the guy who rang in before about the mindset, let me comment on that after the break. But yeah, you're so right. The battle for survival is all in the heart and mind, and on your own is very hard.
Okay, so we're going to talk about that when we come back, because you're listening to Bear Grylls. He's author of How to Stay Alive, the Ultimate Survival Guide for Any Situation, and of course, host of shows such as Man vs. Wild and Running Wild with Bear Grylls. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour with Bear Grylls. He's got a new book out. It's How to Stay Alive, the Ultimate Survival Guide for Any Situation. And Bear, before the break, we had heard from caller Steve, who was former Navy Special Forces here in the U.S., and he'd gone through the Navy's really rigorous SEER training. And he was talking about how one of the toughest things for him was the mental challenge of the 48-hour period that he had to spend in complete isolation. And whether or not you've ever experienced a similar challenge or have gone out on one of these survival expeditions without a camera crew, I couldn't let you respond before the break, but I wanted to give you a shot at that now.
Yeah, no, first of all, Steve, respect for your service, and likewise to the guy who rang in before. You're both so right. The battle for survival is won and lost in the mind. The SEER training is something I went through, likewise, as part of the British Special Forces. It is long, it is arduous, it is tough. And the time on your own, I would second what you said, Steve. It's hard, but you need to kind of get into that mind focus. Okay, we're into this, you know, however long it's going to be, just break it down into the daily tasks. And I actually found you get so busy surviving, you know, mm-hmm. It's job after job, and people kind of, you know, often underestimate how busy it is as a lone survivor to look after yourself. And again, you know, when we're now as a crew, you know, when we're filming stuff, everything is so much easier when you have an extra set of hands if you need it, you know, putting up shelters or getting a fire going to someone else if you need it, just to put a foot on that while you do, you know, the bow drill. But everything on your own is so much harder. But it is also busy. You know, I just remember that SEER training I went through, the days on our own, it was just dawn to dusk, your energy, collecting firewood, repairing this, setting snares, doing that, you know, it's like, and by the end, it's like you're it's all on your shoulders. And then it's that mental side. You've got to keep yourself upbeat. You've got to keep thinking. You know, I always say to people in a survival situation, it's never letting your mind go into neutral. There's always something to be doing, to think about, to be planning. And that's why it becomes very draining. With the times on your own, I think it's three times harder than when you got one other buddy with you.
Bear, there's one more thing that Steve had said that caught my attention, and I just want to just get a quick response from you, because then actually we've got a lot of online questions, and I kind of want to do a little lightning round with you. But there's something that Steve said that he managed to snare a rabbit or two during his SEER training, and I was thinking, he's a really highly trained Navy Special Forces guy, and so he managed to snare a rabbit or two. But I was wondering, do you ever worry that people watching your shows, for example, come, because you have to show the successes along with the challenges on television of these survival situations, do you ever wonder that people come away thinking it's easier than it actually is?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, listen, nobody's going to put on telly me spending 3 hours trying to light a fire, but that is often the reality, you know. Certainly in the old days on the Man vs. Wild shows, you know, I'd spent hours and hours doing this, or, you know, hours and hours setting snares and all that. Obviously, that's just going to make a really boring program, you know. So everything gets edited down, and before you know it, it's like a bit of music and bish, bash, bosh, Bear's got a fire going. But you cut to the reality of it. It is hard work for sure.
Yeah.
But I think one of the lessons of survival is embracing failure, you know, not being scared to fail. And it's just, this is why I said right at the start of the show, survival is summed up three words: never give up. Right. It's all about that tenacity, that spirit. And you might have to go through multiple failures, hours and days of getting something wrong before you get success. And that's why the rewards always go to the dogged, the determined, yeah, not necessarily the brilliant, the brave, the strongest, you know.
Well, so let's do a lightning round, a quick answer round here if we can.
By the way, two rabbits, 40 people. Good. Yeah. That's going to be, no wonder you lost 14 pounds, Steve.
In 2 weeks.
You know, wow, yeah. And I've seen it so many times. We run another survival show called The Island, where we drop these people on this desert island and leave them with nothing, no camera crews or anything. They have to film everything themselves. And, you know, we come back a month later and it's like carnage. I mean, it's like extreme weight loss. And that is the reality of survival, is you're starving, you're dehydrated, you're frightened, you're wet, you're cold, and that's why it's very unglamorous. It's very unromantic. The hard reality of survival is grim.
Well, so speaking of the unglamorous part of survival, we've just got so many good questions here. A lot of them coming in on social media. I just want to do like a little lightning round. So I'll ask the question and just a quick answer so we can get through as many of them as we can here. Okay. So Brian Ressler from on Facebook says, I've often wondered, after eating beetles and crustaceans in survival situations, how miserable is Bear's intestinal tract? I mean, does he sit there and say, why couldn't I be somewhere with some nice soft grubs to eat?
Yeah, my intestinal tract needs some attention. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely, talking about the failures, a number of things I've eaten that end up with bad diarrhea and stuff, you know. So, but on the whole, it's, you know, again, you learn by the failures, don't you? Next time I go, that's a stinging beetle. Don't eat that one again.
All right. So Matt wanted to know, how often has Bear guessed wrong and ingested a poisonous plant or animal? I guess that has happened, according to what you just said.
But also, you've got to be super careful in the wild. You only make big mistakes once. And when it comes to, you know, poison, things like fungi and mushrooms and plants, and you've got to really know your stuff and be careful. And if there's doubt, there's no doubt. Don't eat it.
Right.
You know, especially when it comes, I actually now with mushrooms, you know, I just don't even go near them now in the wild, because there's too many ones in different areas that look like something you think is okay. And then, you know, I mean, look at that story from Alaska. What's that one? What's that great film? You know, the guy who thinks he's eating the Alaska potato, Into the Wild, you know?
Yeah,
so be smart. You only get it wrong.
Right.
You only get it wrong once out there.
Yeah. By the way, if for folks who haven't read it, John Krakauer's original book is amazing. Tanya B. asks, any special advice pertaining to women?
Well, hey, listen, what I've learned about ladies in the wild is that they make incredible survivors. And I've taken so many running wild guests that, you know, you think that the man, you know, the big butch sort of actor who's got the big muscles, he's going to be great. But actually in the little twig of an actress, of a girl, you think she's going to snap in the wild, and she's often just like made of steel. So survival is all about that inner spirit, not the outer muscles. And I've seen incredible heroics from fantastic ladies. We've got some great ladies on our team who are such an inspirational survivalist. So they are living examples that survival is all about spirit and resourcefulness and tenacity and positivity. And actually, some of them, though, have the guns to go with it, you know, so that's always impressive to see as well.
All right. One more lightning round here question. Sam Winston on our website says, Bear, can you do your classic howl like when you accomplish a big climb? Thanks. That's from Sam.
Woo! Come on! Never give up, team. We're on it. We're moving on. Let's keep going. Stay positive. Protein in. We can do this.
Bear Grylls and his classic howl. Let's go to Marcelina, who's calling from Dayton, Ohio. You're on the air, Marcelina.
Thank you for taking my call. My question for Bear is, I thought I read somewhere, if you're lost in the woods, you can eat or use any part of a pine tree. The pine cones, the needles, drink the water from the cones, the leaves, the bark. But I can't find the information, so I need to know if that's true or not.
That is true. The pine tree is one of the unsung heroes of the wild, and there's so much you can do, everything you mentioned, but also more. You know, in the old days, they used to use a resin, mix it with the charcoal from a fire and make glue out of that, you know, patch up canoes or to stem wounds. There's so much to do. I spend a lot of time as moving through forests just chewing on the needles. Good vitamin C, you know, I mean, think of all of the classic old Royal Navy in the old days sailing around the world, and scurvy. Do you remember what a thing scurvy was? Yeah. And everyone was dying, lack of vitamin C, and yet they were harvesting pine trees where they were going to replace their masts in the ships. But what they didn't realise that the pine trees could give them a lot more than just good new masts on their ship. It could give them all the vitamin C, and it wasn't hundreds of years later they figured these things out. So the pine tree is one of the many heroes of the outdoors, and also super easy to make fire with. You get that fat pine. It's got a lot of resin in it. We'll take just put a little spark onto that. And that's why you've got to be so careful, obviously, with forest fires, highly flammable, but one of the unsung heroes of the wild.
Let's go to Jess, who's calling from Lakewood Ranch, Florida. Jess, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I live in Florida, like, obviously, and you know, there's a lot of swamps down here. So my question is, what would be the best way to find clean water in the swamp? Thank you.
Well, the one thing there's no shortage of in the swamps is water. But like all water, just clear water doesn't mean it's clean water. So wherever you're getting your water from, you've got to purify it. Otherwise, you're going to drink it and it's just going to make you sick. It's going to give you diarrhea and that dehydrates you further. So really, the surefire way of doing it is to make fire and is to boil that water. And once it's boiling, you've killed the bacteria, you're good to drink. And this is why fire is such a fundamental skill to be able to do as a survivor.
Well, you'd also have something to boil it in, right?
Yeah, you do need that. But again, you know, it's about being resourceful. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, if you don't have canteens or stuff in the wild, you've got to be resourceful. I mean, people don't realize even things like a plastic water bottle, you know, just one of the ones you buy in a supermarket. You can actually boil that over a fire. If it's full of water, even though it's that thin plastic, as long as the water is in it, you can put it on a fire. It will stretch a bit, but it won't burst. If it's empty, you put it on fire, it's just going to melt. But once there's water in it, you can boil it, take the cap off, and it will boil.
Yeah.
So little tricks like that, it's not going to be good for you. You're going to end up with a bunch of CFCs or whatever because you're boiling, but it will keep you alive. So, but again, that's about resourcefulness, isn't it? Thinking ingeniously.
And you also talk in the first couple of chapters of the book, you talk about what to put in your pack anytime you go out, what sort of first aid you should carry with you. So, you know, be prepared is obviously one of the big survival lessons here. Let's get another call. Jill is calling from Boca Raton, Florida. You're on the air, Jill.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask about missing hiker Samantha Sayers. She was an experienced hiker hiking Vesper Peak in Snohomish County in the state of Washington, and went missing on August 1st. The family believes she's still very much alive, and the family has continued their own search efforts after the county quit theirs. And I'm wondering, what is the possibility of her still being alive and after about 2 months of being missing?
Yeah.
And how would she do that?
Jill, thank you for your call. Just to fill folks in who don't know, I mean, I'm seeing here that Samantha Sayers, 28 years old. She was on a solo hike at Vesper Peak in the North Cascades in Washington. But August 1st is a long time ago. So, I mean, Bear Grylls, I hate to ask you this, but what do you put her odds at?
Well, those are temperate mountains, if I'm right. You know, it's not like getting lost in Death Valley with nothing, where without water you're really going to struggle. You know, these are mountains that have resources in the sense that they have animals, they have water, they have shelter, they have trees, you know. So there is a, you know, listen, if it's your family one, your loved one, you never give up hope, do you? But all I'd say is in those sort of mountains, if she's smart, there's no reason why she can't live for 2 months. So it all comes down to skills and the spirit. You know, if she's figured out a way of finding water and boiling water and catching food, you know, she can stay alive. You know, it's that rule of threes, which is 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. So at some point she's going to have to have found food. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of food there with the berries and the grubs and the, you know, the animals and the insects and all of that. So the potential for sure is there.
Yeah. Bear, you know that story about Samantha Sayers, who's still missing in the North Cascades. I feel like we can't emphasize it enough. Nature is a beautiful, wondrous place for us to experience and be part of and have part of our lives. But it's also, your show is called Man versus Wild, but I always think when it's humans versus nature, Mother Nature is pretty much always going to win, especially if you're solo. So when it comes to, first going out there, what do you think is the most important skill that we ought to be relearning? Is it orienteering, beyond the mindset we've been talking about? What should we be learning for ourselves individually to help us in any kind of survival situation we might encounter?
Well, I think never underestimate the wild. That is such a key one, and leave your ego at home, because so often our ambitions can be bigger than our skills, and no plan survives first contact with the enemy. Something goes wrong and that storm comes, or you twist your ankle and suddenly you're out there and you got no plan, you're in a lot of trouble. So I think one of the most fundamental things is be prepared. Like the scouts say, be prepared. And that covers so much. That covers what your plan is, who you tell your plan is. So, if you say, listen, I'm due in 2 days, I'm due back, and three days are gone, your family haven't heard from you, they know to come and look for you. If you haven't told anyone of that, people might not be looking for you for days and days. Be prepared in the equipment and the clothing you wear that are suitable for the environment you're going to. So simple things, though, can make a huge difference, and you've got to anticipate things going wrong. And I think one of the most fundamental ones is what happens if you're lost. Mm-hmm. And I think two things. First of all, stay put. So often people make a bad situation worse by getting lost and just going off. And then suddenly when they're a day later and they're out of energy and they're out of fluids and they're really lost, they're now miles from where they were last spotted. So staying put is a smart thing. If you've done that, but nobody's ever coming looking for you because you've been an idiot and you haven't told anyone where you're going and you've got to self-rescue, a good tip is to always head downhill, locate a stream, follow the stream to a river, and follow a river to signs of civilization, whether it's tracks or roads or people. And people tend to congregate around rivers. So that thing is something we were taught very early on in the military. Even when we were doing our selection process in the mountains, if you're ever lost, head down, find the stream, follow it to a river, follow it to a road.
Yeah. We've just got a minute to go here, Bear. What are the survival situations you haven't yet been in but want to test yourself?
Well, do you know what? We have gone to a lot of the extremes in the world. We really have, from the deserts to the jungles to the high mountains to the polar region. So we've been super lucky. I think I've also learned, though, is you don't need to go far from home to have an adventure, and you don't need to go far from home to get into trouble. So don't underestimate lower mountains and the mountains around your homes. You don't have to go far to find yourself in trouble. Leave the ego behind, be well prepared, and the value of friendships is immeasurable. And ultimately, survival is about spirit, never giving up. And if people can learn one thing from How to Stay Alive, this book, remember it's that NGU, never give up.
Well, Bear Grylls, he's the adventurer, writer, and television host of Running Wild with Bear Grylls and Man vs. Wild. His new book is How to Stay Alive, the ultimate survival guide for any situation. And we have an excerpt of it at onpointradio.org. Bear, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so, so very much.
No worries. You guys have a great day.
And folks, tell us about your outdoor adventures. Go to onpointradio.org and share your stories there. We'd love to hear them. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.